This is Bucket Listening from First Horizon Bank, sharing firsthand stories from people who have found a way every day to live their bucket list.
Everyone has aspirations. Often we see them as goals to be accomplished sometime down the road. But we say, why wait? Welcome to Bucket Listening, where we're talking to extraordinary people who have found a way every day to live their bucket life. Hi, I'm your host, Tabitha Scott, and I'm excited that you're here with us for this episode. On the show today, we're joined by Dr. Mario Brown, Chief Talent Officer at First Horizon. For the past 10 years, Dr. Mario has been deeply influential in shaping the current of culture that flows throughout First Horizon. In his role as Chief Talent Officer, he brings valuable insights and a magnetic energy that powers a positive corporate culture. So we thought, who better to help us unpack some of the inspiring themes that have emerged from previous episodes? Mario, welcome to Bucket Listening.
Thank you, Tabitha. I'm so excited to be here today.
I'm excited to have you here. I mean, you've had such a fascinating life's journey, and I can't wait to hear more about the road you've been on and how it led you to First Horizon. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of years ago, I just had a lot of things going on in my life, and it's just life. And I'll just kind of give the short part of it. I was a new dad. Also, I was aspiring to be in this senior role. So I pursue education. I love education. I learned a long time ago that education is the greatest gift of all, just because once you have it, nobody can ever take it away from you. So I made it my life's mission to help others through education and awareness. So anyhow, one of the roles that I always wanted to be in was this role called Vice President of Student Affairs. I just absolutely love this role because you had an opportunity to work with students at all developmental stages and really support them as they, you know, became even better adults. So anyhow, I was really trying to get on that journey of being a Vice President of Student Affairs, and I was working at a university, and several things just kind of came down on me at one time. So I mentioned that I already had one child. I was getting ready to have another child on the way. My wife is a nurse, and just as a male, I was at this point in my life where I just felt like I was not living up to my part. Like, I felt like I wasn't, you know, making enough income to support our family. I felt like I was not achieving goals to, you know, meet my wife where she is and really be there for her and support her. I just felt really bad. And right after that, also, I was in the process of completing my doctoral degree. And lo and behold, I was getting ready to have my second child. So not that enough was going on, like all of these things were compounding. And also, while I was getting ready to complete my doctoral degree, my mom unfortunately suffered from what was called a hemorrhagic stroke. And I remember the phone call that day. I was getting ready to go and visit her. And when I called her cell phone, a male voice picked up the phone and said, "Is this Mario?" And I was like, "It is, but this is not my mom." And he said, "This is officer, I forgot his name, from the police department. And we believe your mom had a stroke while driving and she was attempting to call you. That is how I knew your name, because my name had popped up in the phone." And literally my life just, you know, it was a very orgasmic effect because it was kind of like everything was going fast and slow at the same time. So anyhow, that was happening. The second child was happening. I wasn't at the job of where I wanted to be. So, you know, to kind of summarize all of this, I could go into more to it. I was at a very low point, very low point in my life.
That's a lot. And
That was a lot.
Even for an overachiever like you, that's a lot.
Oh my gosh. I was pretty overwhelmed. So here's what ended up happening. I ended up going for a checkup. My wife is a nurse, so she's always worried about my health, of course. And so she was like, "You need to go in for a checkup," because I kept telling her I wasn't feeling well, this, that, and the other. And normally, like, I'm moving, I'm popping, I'm shaking, I'm good. And so the doctor, I remember this vividly too, said, "Mr. Brown, all of your vitals and everything check out fine." She said, "I'm not sure why you continue to experience these symptoms, but what I think it is underlying stress. So if you do not remove that underlying stress, I will probably have to prescribe you to be on blood pressure medicine. And most of the time, it's very difficult to come off of that." And keep in mind, my mom just had a stroke, right? From hypertension, from high blood pressure. So all of this like really hit me. So I made a big move. That next day, I went and wrote my resignation letter for the job that I was at. I had no job. And I wrote the letter on Friday, went home for the weekend, came in on Monday, kindly turned in my resignation notice and told them I really enjoyed the experience here. This is a great institution. I really appreciate everything they have done for me. I just have to go. It's not about them. I just needed to leave because I was at a crux. I also wrote my major professor and told him that I was dropping out of school, even though I had completed my dissertation. I only had my defense. And I told them that I would come back. I needed to really focus my time and attention on taking care of my mom. This is a new ordeal for me. I was just turning 30 and I was trying to figure out a lot of stuff. So fast forward, I hung out for a while, did a little contracting work, got myself together around taking care of my mom. Second child came, all of these things happened. And one day I remember doing some contracting work. I was in Louisiana and I received a call from First Tennessee Bank. And so I answered the phone. I'm like, hello. And the reason I answered the phone truly because remember, I was taking care of my mom. She has been a client of First Tennessee. Oh, my gosh. All of my life. So I just knew that they were calling to tell me something was wrong with her account. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is something else I got to deal with. My goodness gracious. So on the phone was a recruiter. And she said, hello, I'm calling you about the application that you put in for this job. And to be honest, I was like, no, I didn't put in the application. I'm not sure why you're even calling me right now. You know, I was just in a very different state, right? And so she continued. She's like, no, listen, hear me out. And she continued to talk to me about the position. I was like, are you sure you want an educator to work at the bank? Are you positive? She said, yes, we think that you would be a good fit. And I was like, okay. You know what? I have nothing else to lose. Like I'm at rock bottom right about now. Let's just try it out. So I go in for the interview, meet some amazing people. Still had a lot of questions about this idea of corporate America, but meet some amazing people. And I was like, this banking thing is not as cold-hearted as I thought it would be. Like this place, this place seems pretty cool, right? You know? Yeah. And so after that, to kind of fast forward, here's what ended up happening. So I ended up becoming a caretaker for my mom. I got all of that settled. It took me a while to get to that place. My major professor would not let me quit school. He came back and said, once you get to a good place, we are going to make sure that you complete this earned degree. And so I did end up completing my doctorate. Thanks to him. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Wilson. End up having my second child, right? She was healthy and good. End up landing the job at First Tennessee Bank, which was absolutely amazing because it doubled my salary from what I was making. I was like, thank goodness, like I needed this uplift in my life. And it was so good because right after I started the bank, I also was getting ready to have another child, which was my third child who was born right after I got to the bank. And I always joke with people, when I came to the bank, I said, it was just going to be 1 year and then I'm going to go back to education. And that 1 year turned into 10. So there you go. There it is.
And First Tennessee, for our listeners, that is a bank that now is called First Horizon.
First Horizon,
bank.
Yes. We've expanded and grown. So we can't just be First Tennessee anymore. We got to represent all the communities and places that we live in. And we are excited about it.
That is awesome. What a story of triumph and tribulation there. There's something we can all learn from. And it's interesting now that you're in this role at First Horizon. I see you posting on LinkedIn all the time when you're out there visiting different markets within the company's footprint. And how important is that for you to be in person meeting and talking to so many First Horizon associates face to face?
It's paramount, Tabitha. I always share with people that the most basic need of any human being is connection. So think about it this way. When you want to learn something or know something or get something done, you may go and ask somebody, can you help me with this? And when they say, they might say, hey, I don't know how to do that or where to get that from, but I can connect you with somebody. That is a positive feeling. Or if they say, yes, let me connect you with their proper resources. We all appreciate connection. And so for me in this role, I am so grateful for the many associates that helped to power First Horizon. And I think it's so important to have that face-to-face one-on-one time with them because they give their all every single day to make our organization what it is. I always think about the story of our organization. You know, we started here in Memphis when Abraham Lincoln was the president of the United States, which is just like, why, right? It's just kind of crazy to think about that. But what's beautiful within that, if you look at the history of our organization through all of these years, there have been generations upon generations of what I call custodians, people who have always brought their all to this organization to make sure that it will survive for years and years to come. And so the least we can do, the least I can do, is make sure that they know that they are cared about, they are supported, we are here for them just like they are here for us, right? And do whatever we can to stand in the gap of support. So that is why it is my honor and privilege to always travel and just chit chat with people, hang out, connect them with resources. I think it's the least we can do for our associates.
I love that. And what are some of the things that you hear from them on the road? You know, what are some of the things that they're going through and thinking and saying out in the field?
Oh my gosh, our associates are wonderful because I don't know if it's me or if it's our company culture. It's probably a combination of both. But listen, our people treat you like, I mean, I don't know if our people ever met a stranger, because when I go and meet with them, we talk about all types of things. We talk about family stuff. We talk about things they're doing in the community. We talk about them helping their clients. So I have heard a range of stories that could last me a lifetime. I've heard about how our associates feel like superheroes, like literally feel like superheroes, because they are able to help clients in some of their most dire circumstances, really get the financial advice or information they need to move forward in life. And so that really motivates our people. I've even heard about, I had a chance to sit down with several associates who really talked to me about personal experiences. Like, we had an associate one time that had a very near-death experience, and we had a deep conversation about how that has changed his trajectory on how he views relationships at work, relationships with clients, how he is more present and in the moment, and how it just has motivated him to do different things in life. And so we hear the gamut of things. We also hear about what they appreciate about the organization. But I will tell you, our people are also honest. They also tell us where we can do better. But I appreciate that, because we, you know, how can you get better if people don't be real with you? So they give us the gamut. They give us the gamut of information.
You know, I think it's interesting when you talk about being at your low point and having a very ill family member and not being able to afford the things that you needed to afford with that next baby on the way. And I imagine that empathy goes a long way with people throughout the organization and the talent you're managing, that they can really relate to you and vice versa.
Absolutely, Tabitha. And I think, to your point, I love the fact that you said that. I think you're right. That empathy goes a long way, because no matter what associate I meet, no matter what state or department or time that they've been here or where they have come from, you know, for me, I can always seem to find myself within the stories or concerns that they have, right? And maybe that's it. Maybe that is what allows me to really connect with them, is because, I'm gonna be honest, I'm fascinated. When I go and meet with people, it's a fascination. I'm like, wow. And I'm like, we're really engaging in conversation. So I think you're right. I think that line of connection and empathy does go a long way.
It sure is important. And one of the reasons for this podcast is to share these inspiring perspectives from some of your folks that have joined us along the way, First Horizon, as well as very high achievers on their approach to living out their bucket life every day. And throughout our first season of episodes, we've heard several clear themes resonating from all of the guests. So, Dr. Mario, let's start unpacking a few of those themes together, shall we?
Let's do it.
That sounds great. One of the key concepts we've heard is how the culture and mindsets we create for ourselves and for others within our sphere of influence often determine our capacity for achievement and success. Now, let's play a short clip from our conversation with University of Tennessee football coach Josh Heupel to illustrate exactly what we're talking about. And then I want to get your thoughts on the other side of that. Is that cool?
That sounds awesome.
Let's do it.
Now, as you build a culture, I think it's really important that you're clear in your message to our staff, you got to think, you know, where we have close to 60 staff members, a majority of those people are coming from different places that I may have or may not have had experiences with. And you got 125 plus players. So what are the characteristics of who we want to be every single day inside of our building? Clearly define that. Then you set standards to measure that. And it's really important that you hold everybody accountable to those standards. You're transparent and you're real in your communication with them. I think it's important for us when we're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, but I think it's important in every business as well that you treat everybody fairly, but you also understand where they're coming from, their perspective, and how you can best reach them as you're communicating with them about successes or failures.
So Mario, what did you think of what Coach had to say about the importance of positive culture building in both personal and team settings, and the ways that his message might connect with the principles you're trying to elevate at First Horizon?
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. Even though Coach is on the other side of Tennessee, we are all Tennessee. So I absolutely loved it. And I was so excited to hear that episode with my good colleague, Dave Miller, as well. So I think he is right. One of the things about culture is a unique type of entity. Because it's like the way I think about it, it's almost like trying to turn a huge ship, right? And get it aligned. And so it's difficult work. You have to be consistent on the messages over and over again, because the thousands of conversations that happen or, you know, on any team really help to contextualize what a culture is or is not. And one of the things we want to make sure is that, number one, that this contextualization is aligned, that people have some of the same language, they have some of the same beliefs around who we are trying to be and how we're going to get there, right? But you also want enough understanding in the culture so that when it's time to change or pivot and have that agility, that people understand that we can do this, right? We can do this. We can love the challenge and accept the responsibility of the change. And so culture is more about this framework that we use, and that if we can get people to have greater awareness, that's around their thinking and thought habits, right? We know that their thinking and thought habits can then ultimately affect their behaviors. And it's just kind of like what people say at First. If you put bad stuff in, you're going to get bad stuff out. And we really try to make sure that those enlightening, challenging concepts go into the thinking and thought habits so that when it comes time to perform and behaviors, people have great awareness on what's right and what's ethical and what are we supposed to do. And so from the thinking to the behaviors, we know that the results are going to be optimized. We know that the results are going to continuously push us forward. We know that the results are also going to be rewarding for that individual. And then collectively, the results are going to be rewarding for the team. So again, culture, as I think people have heard this before, culture eats strategy all the time. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner is what I would say. You know, you can have a great plan of action, but if you don't have a great culture to support that and it's not aligned, then you're really kind of spinning your wheels.
Absolutely. And culture does tie back to values as well. And we've heard with the coach how he's talking about individuals and teams working together and shared goals. And I would imagine a lot of the bank's values come through as well.
They do every single day. You know, and one of the things around value, I will be honest, the same thing that Coach does is that one of the biggest components of leadership or even running a team or an organization or an entity is the magic is back to what I talked about earlier with connection. You have to help people understand how their personal values, right? Personally, what they value in life connects with their team value or connects with their organization value. Right. So even with us, one of our values is putting our clients first. So think about how does that tie into a personal value? Well, if you care about people, right, if you care about people, we prioritize what we do and how we do it and the energy we put into it. Right. And another one of our values outside of putting clients first is we care about people. And I think people have seen that. I mean, you do not see institutions go on for 160 years without being able to say they have cared about their people, right? We care about the communities, right? Those types of things. So anyhow, those are great examples.
That's so true. And I want to take you to another episode where we had the chance to speak with music license executive, Randy Grimmett. Now, Randy was the founder of Global Music Rights, and a theme that emerged in our conversation there was this important role that risk often plays in achievement and what we ultimately decide to pursue. And Randy left this prominent position at ASCAP because he thought there were aspects of the business that he could elevate on his own in a better way. But it was a big, big risk to jump out and start a competing business. So let's listen to what Randy had to say. And then, Mario, I'd love for you to share how you help First Horizons people take calculated risks, because people don't think about bankers taking risks. So we'd love to know how can they do that, you know, as an avenue Absolutely. For growth and personal development. So let's play that clip of what Randy had to say.
A lot of internal conflict about leaving a job that I'd been at for a long time and that I really loved, and people that I really loved. And there is a song by John Mayer, who's one of my favorite artists. He happens to be a client now. And it's called Walt Grace's Submarine Test 1967. And the refrain of the song is, when you're done with this world, the next is up to you. And I really kind of had that song on repeat and listened to it a lot because I thought, well, I am kind of done with this world. I mean, I'm done with the way we do business at ASCAP, and I want to try to figure out a different way to do it. And in order to do it, I'm going to have to take a leap of faith to go out and make the next world look more like what I wanted it to look like when I was going through this process of thinking. So it was incredibly inspirational to me. It still is. We just celebrated our 10th anniversary in May of this year. And I spent a lot of time talking about that particular event because it just was something that gave me the faith and confidence to think that there probably was a way to do it. You couldn't see it when we jumped off the cliff, but we felt like maybe there would be something that would work out for us.
Wow, that was really incredible. Mario, what are your thoughts about taking risks at work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love how Randy kind of explained and said, you know, I'm kind of done with this. It's time for me to move on. I can figure out a better way. One of the values of First Horizon is that we are committed to excellence in everything we do. And so part of excellence is making sure you also have the ability to constantly be in this stage of curation, to constantly be in this stage of optimizing resources, information, products, things of that nature. And so with that being said, there is an inherent risk to that, right? Because when you get ready to curate or do something new, you're not sure if it's going to work, but you are putting your best foot forward to try to do good, right? Try to do better. And so here at the bank, we have gone through several iterations of that. When you think about us moving from what many of us probably grew up with this kind of traditional form of banking where you would go into a banking center and meet with somebody, to now we have like these super duper online platforms where people can do all types of things in the convenience of their home, and that will continue to evolve. That's a risk because, as you know, a bank is more of a risk-averse business. And as we go into the age of technology, the biggest risk for us is cyber attacks, right, from other people. We do not want people to be in a place where their money or financial means are compromised. And so, but we still, at the same time, want to provide extreme kind of service to our clients. So that is a conundrum that we continue to face, but it is a risk that we feel like is worth it. Right? Because we continue to want to make sure we meet clients where they are. But even internally as an organization, we take plenty of risk in terms of evolving our structure, evolving our processes, evolving many of the things that, you know, we probably have been very comfortable with over the years, but we know in order to survive going forward, or I will say thrive, not survive, but thrive going forward, these changes are necessary. I appreciate First Horizon because even our executive team, I get a chance to work with them. I'm going to be honest with you. I met with our CEO one day when I first got here. And I went to Brian. I said, Brian, this executive team is different. And I don't know if he thought I was crazy or what. He was so kind. He said, well, how so? And I told him, I said, for me, I appreciate the extreme thoughtfulness of this particular group. As executive leaders, I appreciate their foresight. It's not all about business, business, business. It's really thinking 5 and 10 years ahead of how do we make sure we protect our clients? How do we protect the bank? And how do we avoid risk, right? Those risks that will really kind of shut us down. but what risks do we need to take internally to make sure we are safe and sound? So we continue to kind of go through that iteration, and we prepare the associates to be ready for that too. Like this constant state of, not constant, but we know that change is inevitable. So we try to make sure our associates are primed for that as well.
That's great. And that message from Randy, you know, talking about risk is just one of so many that we had this season. More recently, we were joined by Donna Orender, and she was a former professional basketball player turned commissioner of the WNBA, then a PGA consultant, and now is leader of two foundations aimed at empowering girls and women. She really embodied for us the power of finding joy in the journey and reveling in the experience of every day. Here's what Donna had to say.
I think we have to find there's joy in everything, everywhere, every day, but you have to be intentional about seeing it, feeling it, and then owning it, which I think is really important, right? Because there's, I always talk about the magic, the miracles. You know, everybody's waiting for this big blast bang thing to happen. It's like your bucket list. It has to be the most audacious big trip or place in the most remote area. And it doesn't have to be that at all. I mean, it's all sprinkled through. But unless we want to be open, alert, and intentional about being present in all those things, and I don't want to sound too new agey here, but I do think that's really important in order to live your best life.
Mario, as you hear that clip, I know you've got a concept that you talk about within First Horizon that encourages people to be here now. Tell us about that concept and how it might connect to the idea of a bucket life that finds beauty and contentment in the moment rather than simply arriving at it down the road.
That's right. I really love how Donna talked about just enjoying every day, everything, everywhere, because that is true. So yes, even, and I hope that our clients see this. I know I see it internally. We talk about be here now, and that's really about being present in the moment. We have been sharing that and unpacking that with our associates and the importance of that for many, many years. Almost, I know more than I have been here. So for more than a decade, we have really kind of hit home with this. In fact, if you walk into a First Horizon branch, you probably will even see a plaque sitting on their desk that says, be here now. And it reminds us to be in the moment and pay attention to who is in front of you. Because once again, connection is the most basic need that we have. I would like to share, though, there was an interesting book called 4,000 Weeks that was written. And they also talk about this concept of be here now within that book. But what's fascinating about it is the author within that book really kind of explains this concept of time and how this concept of time has really construed understanding and vision for some people. It's a book by a gentleman named Oliver Berkman. So Oliver goes through this period of when time was not necessarily a thing for people to when we start using time to maybe meet up at places or understand our quote unquote productivity. And then he brings it all the way forward to, and no offense to anyone who has, you know, authored one of these books, but you know, you hear about the 15 things that highly successful people do before 5 a.m. every day. But what I really appreciated underlying all of that, Oliver talks about at the end of the day, most of our energy and time should be focused in the moment of where we are and who we are. And we should put our energy and time towards that because the past has already happened. And to be honest, the future is undetermined and we're not even guaranteed the future. So your best bet is to really connect and be here now. And so we just try to share that with our associates. Enjoy the moments that you, when you're on vacation, be on vacation, right? When you're with your clients, be with your clients. When you go home from work, be with your family. Like don't do work while you're at home, right? So enjoy every single moment because people, we as people love that. We love that sense of direct connection with each other.
We do. And you know, the way you say that, it makes me think of one of my favorite quotes from Lao Tzu. And it says, if you are depressed, you are living in the past. If you are anxious, you are living in the future. If you are at peace, you are living in the present. And it sounds like that's what you're trying to say as well.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. Just live in the moment because life is life. And the quote is right. We worry too much about the future. And then we reflect a lot of on our past. But do we really have control over those things, right? That's what you have to think about. What can I control? I can control where I am and what I'm doing right now. And that's where, you know, we will optimize our life altogether.
And I love that message because people tend to not even observe the present. What is going on? Who am I meeting? Why are they coming into my life? Because they're so anxious about what's coming or they're regretting what's already been. So I love that. And this podcast is all about the ways in which people turn their bucket lists into beautiful lives. So when it comes to your own bucket list, what are some of the principles you find most meaningful when you're in pursuit of your dreams?
Yes. So one of them that I have learned is, as I just shared, is to just live in the moment. As I shared at the beginning, you know, life teaches you a lot of lessons. And I think the biggest lesson that I've learned is, Mario, enjoy it now. Enjoy every single bit of it now. I was looking at my kids the other day, and anybody that has kids, like literally in my mind, they were all born yesterday, but they're not. Like, I have a middle schooler and I have two that are completing elementary school, and they are just, man, like after a while, I think they're going to be grown and out of my house. So I'm trying to like enjoy every moment I have with them. So that's the biggest thing, even with my wife, just really enjoying every single moment that we get a chance to spend with each other after work and on the weekends and on vacations, things like that. In terms of the bucket list, I had to come to a place, though, I'll be honest with you, where I feel good internally about where I am. Certainly, there are things I would love to do. I grew up Catholic, and when JP2 was living, and I had the opportunity with my church to visit Italy for 2 weeks, and it was absolutely beautiful. And I really, you know, having exposure of something like that, I really would like that for my kids. So if I was to say there's a bucket list item, if I can do that for my kids before I leave this earth, I'm good. Outside of that, to be honest, I've learned to appreciate and be grateful for where I am. For instance, I told our CEO, the job that I'm in today is the job of a lifetime. I am living my bucket list by being in this job. I feel good about where we are as a family. You know, everybody is healthy. We have food on the table. They have a place to stay and we have transportation. So I'm not like one of those people where I'm like, oh, I'm not there yet. I'm not complete. I really feel like getting to this place of knowing that my bucket list is me feeling good when I wake up, not feeling worried, not feeling stressed, not feeling depressed about things of life. It's kind of where I have settled. Not to say that I don't want things, right? But that's where I have settled.
And I feel like a bucket full of gratitude, when that happens, you're just living your bucket list every day. And that's definitely what this podcast is about.
And I know our listeners cannot see it, but I'm gonna show it to you because we're this folder. And I know you can barely see it, but it says gratitude folder. And you see how full it is? So this is where I get my joy. This is where I feel like I have lived my bucket list. So it is oftentimes associates will send random notes of appreciation or kindness, or people will send cards or they'll send emails to tell me thank you for things that I may not have been aware of. And so over the last 10 years, I've collected all those. And so the days when I feel like I may not be as accomplished or, you know, maybe feeling down, I simply look at this gratitude folder and just pull out a note and read it. And it gets me going for another day. So I just wanted to share that with you.
I love that. I love that. And I'm going to challenge all of our listeners out there to start saving those things that make them feel great. And better yet, take a moment and write a note, send an email.
Absolutely.
Pick up the phone and give a call to someone that you appreciate and share that gratitude around. It's like having a magic penny. Like, the more you spend it, the more you get back.
So true. So true.
And thanks again, Mario, for joining us on the podcast today and helping us unpack this inspiring first season of Bucket Listening. We really valued hearing about your incredible perspectives on life. And thanks to our amazing listeners for taking this journey with me and listening to all of our conversations. I hope you enjoyed hearing from the guests as much as I truly loved the opportunity to speak with them and to learn from their insights. This has been Bucket Listening, presented by First Horizon Bank. I'm Tabitha Scott, and I hope you'll join us again soon.